Begin Podfix Network transmission in 3, 2, 1.
Suckers in the back seat. Mama's home hungry.
Mark my words. Michael Knight will die.
I am the voice of Knight Industry 2000's microprocessor.
You wish to eat. You wish to drink. You wish to reproduce.
Yeah.
Which one first?
Excuse me, I was trying to get a Hilstern phone.
I think you're in the wrong department.
Discipline has never been a problem.
Hey, Greg, guess what?
What?
It's really cold out now, and I really don't think I like it at all.
Well, it was very abrupt. You know, I kind of knew it was coming, but then the reality of it when I got up this morning, it was pretty striking.
It was like eight, almost 20 degrees when I woke up this morning, and I just driving to work, and then I realized getting in my car on the way to work that I was out of washer fluid and I hadn't given my car enough time to warm up, so I had to drive with that tiny little spot that had thawed in the corner, so I'm like curled up, like hunched over looking as I'm running my windshield wipers at full speed trying to get it to clear.
No, David, no. That is a driving hazard. You should have waited.
I should have started my car 15 minutes before that, but I was running really
late. Well, I knew it was going to be, it was tough because last night when I went to bed, the temperature outside was already 25 degrees.
Yeah.
And when I got up this morning, the thermometer said that it got down to 17 last night.
Yeah.
Wow, which was great.
Well, let's,
which is super fun.
Let's see what
love
the temperature
it.
Is.
The furnace ran nonstop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Same here. I heard the heat come on all friggin' night and it was pissing me off. So it is now 6:20 in the PM on November 19th and it is 34 degrees in my lovely little city right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I had to say.
Me too. It's 34 degrees also, which I'm happy about. I actually wish it was a little bit colder because I went to the grocery store on the way home and I picked up a nice frozen pizza.
Ooh.
And the damn thing won't fit in the freezer, so I left it outside.
Oh, there you go.
So, yeah.
That's
so hopefully it'll last until we're done with this so I can use it.
I'll make sure we'll be done here within the hour, Greg. I promise
we better be. We had better be done because if my pizza thaws out while it is outside and gets sloppy, I'm going to be very perturbed.
I apologize. Well, you know what? We also started like 20 minutes earlier than we were originally going to, so hopefully we can get this thing done. In a reasonable.
Well, let's just pat ourselves on the back with that one. That's great. We started early. Look
we
at that.
We started
Look
ahead
at
of
us.
Schedule, which we never fucking do. Hey, welcome to Champ
That's
and
right.
Klein, the Knight Rider Years, a podcast by two friends who share a love of classic 80s television. I'm your host, Dave Champa.
I'm your other host, Greg Klein.
Guys, if you're new to the show, man, you picked a weird time to come in when we were about 7 weeks away from the end of the show, but that's okay. The basic idea is that Greg and I choose a classic show from the 80s and we dissect it episode by episode. While we do poke fun at these shows a lot, it is out of complete love and admiration for an era that can never be replicated. Occasionally, we will create our own side story within an episode to see where it takes us. Also, Greg is convinced that all 80s TV and movies are connected within the same universe, so that comes into play many, many times throughout. Greg, how's your week been? How you doing, buddy?
It's been good. Oddly, it's been good. I had an impromptu vacation.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, because due to my work, we have a lot of like COVID restrictions and screening policies and everything. And last week, Christy got like a stomach bug or something, so she was really pukey and gross for like 12 hours.
Yep.
But I had to say something to work. And they're like, "Well, you can't come in. She needs to get a COVID test, and it has to be negative for you to be able to come back to work, or you can quarantine for 14 days." And I'm like, "Well, that's great." So did that. It still took almost 5 days to get the test results back, so I could have quarantined and just hung out, but no. But whatever, it's fine. It actually was kind of good. Did stuff around the house.
Good.
Took a little break. And, of course, due to all the federal whatnot, I'm still going to get paid for all that lost time. So
yeah, see, that's huge.
Whatever.
That's huge right there that you still were able to get paid for that. Now, today was your first day back since how long were you officially out of work?
Last Thursday, so a week.
So about a week. And today you went back, and was it a nice transition back into the day?
I crashed. I cried a lot. I got to work, and within an hour, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I just freaked out, and they had to have me breathe into a paper bag for a while, and I calmed down.
Was it?
But I still spent most of the day just sitting in a chair.
Was it was it one of those bags that you found in the trash that you had to empty from last winter, the week before?
Yeah. Oh God, I don't want to talk
no,
about that.
Let's not.
I don't want to talk about that trash can.
I have a very similar story about something that happened to me at work today, but I can't even get into it because it was so bad that it triggered my gag reflex, and we had to open all the windows in the office. It was really bad today.
That's wonderful. I've had experiences like that. Now, in all honesty, today was great. I had some good stuff, and I've been climbing the walls a bit. I needed to get back to work, so
yeah.
It was a positive, great day.
Good.
You, sir, how have you been since we last chatted?
You know what? Things are good. We're getting back into the groove of everything. You know, I've been back to work since June, but this is my first full week back to work. So this will be my first full 40-hour week back since the end of February.
Wow.
So, because I got furloughed from March to June, and then I went back to part-time from June until now, and this is my first full week back to work, and I'm officially back full time, which is really, really nice. So it'll be fun. And plus, it's at the right time because December is a three paycheck month for me because I get paid biweekly, which is awesome.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, very cool. Me too. Me too.
So
me too.
I am looking forward to it. Christmas shopping has kicked off this week, and as we do every single year, we set a budget for our children that we are going to spend, and we grossly overspend every year,
uh-huh.
And this year is absolutely no uh-huh. different. We are only four gifts in for each child, and we have gone so far over budget that we're just not going to stop.
So why just raise the budget?
So we like to try to set ourselves a goal because, like, you know, obviously, you know, Christmas shopping can get expensive, but I think this year especially, given everything that's happened with Kristen's dad and then her aunt and, you know, her other aunt passed back in May, and it's just been a terrible year. We just decided that this is the year. Mm-hmm. We kind of said we were going to, quote unquote, set a budget, but it never, this year especially, it's just.
Just blow it all.
It's going to be
blow it all on hats.
It's going to be a good Christmas for everybody, I can tell you that much.
Except for you.
I didn't tell you what I bought the other day. One of our listeners sent it to me on Instagram, and I ended up buying it within that first minute. It's a face mask, but on the front of it, it's the entire front panel of Kit's dashboard.
Oh, you showed me a photo of it, but you actually bought it. Oh, cool.
You're damn right I bought it.
Ah, that's cool.
But
sweet.
But yeah, other than that, like I said, this week was a good week. You know, Kristen has her ups and downs, and I don't think it's really ever going to kind of be a norm for a while, you know, given how important her father was to everybody and to us and to her. And I think it's going to be a long road for her, but all things considered, it was a pretty good week for everybody. And Chris and I released mm-hmm. an episode of Cordelia, which is a win for everybody.
Well, there you go. That's great.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, look at that. Look at you guys. Well, I'll be.
Greg, do you want to talk about?
So I just saw you drink.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I'm going to cut you off. Because I have to explain something. So I saw you drink your seltzer, and I don't have seltzer this time around. I in fact have some water, but I've decided to during the show I'm going to eat a very dry granola bar.
Oh God.
we're going to see what happens with that.
Oh.
I have water, but. I'll start right here. Just so everybody knows, I'm going to do some ASMR for you. And this is all. This is what we do. This is
do
what
it.
We do here.
So. Bite it.
Yep, it's dry.
I'm just waiting for one of these points for us to start laughing, and then you just start choking on the dust, and I can't do anything.
Just you wait. It's going to happen.
Let me ask you a question. So, can Christy hear you from downstairs?
I don't know. Okay. I don't think so.
Because I can't yell that loud for her to hear. And I think I have her cell phone, so I can at least text her and say, Greg's choking in your basement.
All right. Yeah. We should do it.
All right, let's get that done. All right.
You can watch me turn blue over the Zoom call.
I would hope that if you're still sitting up and choking, then I mean, I would imagine that you would fall out of frame pretty damn quickly.
No, this is that car seat chair I made, so
right.
it holds you upright. So if I pass out, I'm gonna stay in it because it's very comfortable.
Greg, do you want to talk about tonight's episode?
Yeah. Let's get it done.
All right, here we go, guys. It is we're rounding the corner into the final half, the final third of season four. It is season four, episode 15, Redemption of a Champion. Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is one of the few titles in the show thus far that literally spells out the entire plot of the episode. Am I wrong?
Yeah, we really don't have to go through this one because the title is the plot. You're right.
It basically
I was expecting a different kind of redemption, But any kind of redemption, I suppose, is good.
Were you thinking like this is like a boxing champion who was down on his luck and had to turn to redeeming like bottles and cans at his local redemption center?
Yes. It's all about recycling.
The whole episode, it's just, it was NBC's run at trying to make the earth a little greener back in the 80s. So they decided to make a weird episode about a boxer who just wanders the streets with his trash bag collecting cans.
After working hard all day, the champ comes to the redemption center with $4.55 in returnables.
And you know it was a good day when he found that 15-cent wine bottle. Oh, man.
Yeah. Which is kind of strange because, like, so you get the wine bottle. What about a nice 40? Those are pretty big glass bottles, aren't they?
That's
only 5 cents.
I think those are 5 cents too. But you like, and then there's like in Maine when you get the giant the Oakhurst glass bottles, you can redeem those for $1. So that's that'd be cool if you found one of those
thick ones, those giant thick like old style milk bottles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're great.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
But you know what though? That's really not what this episode was about.
Really?
No. Not at all. Did you watch it?
I think so. I mean, I watched it yesterday. I think I watched it.
Yeah, I did. I have to give you a caveat, Greg. I watched this at 6 o'clock this morning, and like I said to you before we started recording, the first 20 minutes, I'm a little foggy on because I don't really remember, or my coffee hadn't quite taken effect, and
it was very disjointed. It was a good. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I honestly liked it better than the last week's one. The magician stuff was just kind of frustrating, but I actually liked this one
because
it took in a direction that I wasn't expecting. Sort of, I guess. I don't. It was very confusing.
It was,
and it had a cameo of a man who played himself, who wasn't listed anywhere in anything that we talked about. He's in the credits, but it's not really listed in the description.
No, there's
which was nice.
It was pretty fun. It was pretty fun to see that. All right, so,
and I thought it was apropos for a bunch of corrupt boxing agents.
Yes, yes, absolutely. All right, so we open the episode on an old deaf sports writer by the name of Leland, who is watching an old broadcast of a boxing match, and he's recording into it. He's recording his findings, and he's basically trying to prevent a rematch from happening between these two boxers, a man named Grant and a man named Keeler. Am I right on there so far?
I'll take your word for it.
I mean, this is going off of my notes. So, all right. So the man's name, like I said, is Leland, and you know, he calls Devin after this scene. So he's talking to this woman. He pays off this woman for some information that we don't really know about yet. And he pays off this woman for this information, and she leaves, and Leland calls Devin because, of course, everybody knows Devin, right?
Of course. Yeah, because nothing happens outside of the bubble of the foundation.
Right.
Like I said, the foundation generates its own business.
Yes. Absolutely. I feel like everyone just calls Devin, so this guy is no different. He calls Devin and tells Devin to get all the information he can on the death of a man named Samuels, who died in 1978. And before he can finish giving any of this information to Devin, he is knocked out by two men who have broken into his house.
That's one man.
No, there are two.
No, there's only one.
There were two guys in the car. There were definitely...
Only one guy came in the house, though.
Okay.
I thought.
I thought. Yeah, I was tired, so maybe I was actually seeing double.
It could be. So, anywho, yes. He gets... Well, okay. That explains because he couldn't hear him come in. But also, he left his front door open.
Right.
Anyway, this guy comes in and bashes him in the head with something.
I don't know what it was. Couldn't tell.
I don't know. A turkey leg? I'm going to say it was a turkey
All
leg.
Right.
One of the big ones from Disney.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big turkey leg. left a big greasy spot on the side of his head.
And so...
Turkey juice everywhere.
So he knocks...
And he falls to the ground.
Yeah, knocks the guy unconscious, and then he unhooks the... I'm assuming this guy's got gas heat. So he unhooks
sure.
the heater, and he just lets gas seep in.
So, no, you're right. Okay, it was two people, because I do remember the scene.
Okay.
One guy's undoing the thing. You know, I think it's always funny that people disconnect, you know, the gas line and have it blow up and disconnect or leave the oven open or something like that. Wouldn't it be funny if just some like bad assassin goes in and just like disconnects the hoses to the washing machine and leaves a candle burning and thinks that's going to do it?
I did it, guys. I mean, it's like it's been 4 hours. I'm like, didn't you set the timer to go off after an hour? I did. Why is the hell? I mean, I unhooked everything. There was water running, but I unhooked it all.
You kind of missed the point there, buddy.
Okay, now, so you know how in the last couple of weeks, in the last couple of seasons of episodes, you know, Michael never actually makes it to a destination before getting called by Devin to finish, to start a job, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. He's like, he's always on a date or planning a date or something right. like that. This was the worst so far. I felt bad.
So this is the first time we've seen this, that Michael is physically on his date. They're having dinner. They're about ready to take dinner to the bedroom when Kit calls him on the phone in this woman's apartment because Michael has shut off his comlink.
Yeah. Michael, you can't shut off your comlink. You need to be, we're on call 24 hours a day.
Was that the first time Kit has ever, is this the first time we've ever heard that Michael is literally on call 24 hours a day?
That's the first time it's said. And so, yes, it's the first time it's actually spoken that Michael is always on call.
Okay. Because we've said it before, but I don't know if it's actually been spoken until this moment. But I guess he got to eat dinner this time. I mean, he didn't get to eat his date, but I mean.
Well, you said they were about to take dinner in the bedroom, so maybe they were going to take another turkey leg out into the bedroom. They were going to share a giant turkey leg.
Beat each other.
They're going to lady in the trampet from either side. When they get to the bone in the middle, they're going to start kissing around the bone.
No, they're just going to eat the bone. Okay.
Yes. So yes. It's going to sound something like this.
So, oh God, here he goes. So they, okay.
I'm fine. It's all right.
So, of course, that's all Michael hears is, oh, we're on 24-hour call. I can't say no to Devin. So he leaves this woman's home. He goes to Leland's house. But right before he can get in, Kit makes a comment about how he can, his sensors are picking up noxious
fumes.
So
Kit sees that there's a man on the ground. He sees there's a man on the ground in there. And he smells, Kit's chemical sensors are detecting two things. One is perfume, and the other one is, oh my God, Michael, get out of there. So Michael, instead of turning around and running down the stairs, he jumps off the side of the stoop into something, into the air, into a dumpster, I don't know, and then the entire house explodes.
Yeah, killing Leland, who wasn't dead. He was alive, so he was incinerated alive.
That's awful, man. Like knocked out and then having the let's give him a peaceful death. Let's say that he suffocated on the propane first.
Okay, like carbon monoxide
dead. Let's say he's dead.
It's like
but you know what? Yeah. Kit would have said he was dead.
That's true.
No, not carbon monoxide, like straight on propane.
But you're right, though, because Kit doesn't say he's dead, so we assume that he's probably barely alive, so he is literally incinerated when this house goes up, when the timer goes off.
And that turkey leg that was left in there is cooked along with him. It took the coroners a long time to realize that this extra bone was, in fact, from a giant turkey.
An oversized turkey?
Yeah. This man had an extra thigh bone.
Okay, so we come to find out at some point that this rematch, not the rematch, the original fight, Leland's death, and this man named Samuel's death, they're all connected in some way, and we find out that this rematch that's due to happen is going to bring in like $40 million to the guy who's promoting it, whose name is Davis. Did you recognize the actor who played Davis?
No, okay. I didn't.
And it took me a minute, but I had to look it up on IMDb to make sure I was right. So the actor who plays Davis was played by Terry Kaiser, who 3 years after this episode played Bernie at Weekend at Bernie's.
Shit, it was him.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Just without the mustache.
Wow.
Just without the mustache.
Yes. Oh, my God. That's awesome.
I had to like
put. Do you think?
Yeah.
So I think it was actually Bernie.
Okay.
So this is Bernie's previous life when he was a crooked box, whatever.
It's a boxing
manager,
promoter.
Agent.
Yeah.
Yeah, a promoter, crooked promoter. So this was how he got out. This was like witness protection or something, but he's dead. He's Bernie.
Okay.
So The same guy.
I like that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I had to like do the thing where you put the face up and you like you put your hand over his mouth to see, because without that mustache, mm-hmm. it looks, you have to really look hard to make to see it's him.
So who was Bernie though? Let's go into this a little bit. Who was Bernie? Do you remember? I don't recall his story.
Who Bernie was? It Bernie Lomax, was that his name?
I think so. Yeah.
But I feel like there was like a mob aspect to Weekend at Bernie's too. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Oh wait, here it is. Okay.
Okay.
So Weekend at Bernie's stars Andrew McCarthy and Jonathan Silverman as young insurance employees who discover their boss Bernie is dead while attempting to convince people that Bernie is alive. They discover that Bernie had ordered their deaths to cover up his embezzlement. So he was a crooked dude in this movie too.
Okay, so it works. It all works. So I'll put a pin in that and I'll work out the details.
All right, work it out later. Okay, so Michael has to get into the press event that's being held before the rematch. So Kit prints Michael a press card so he can get into the event
instantly.
Just prints it out and fully laminated, no less, with a little tag that he can clip to his lapel.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-assembled press card. The guy lets him in, and they start talking about how Leland has been talking for weeks about stopping this rematch for some reason or another, and Michael needs to prove that this first fight was fixed somehow. This fight, he doesn't know how, but he knows that somewhere along the line there was a fix put in, and Keeler at some point had thrown the match, but he doesn't know how mm-hmm. yet. And this is where we cut to the biggest cameo in the episode, one Mr. Don King.
It's amazing.
It's a great
amazing, and he was throwing out references to actual real fights.
Yes.
That he coordinated. Yeah.
Yes. I thought it was great. So does that mean, because he starts talking about the thriller in Manila, the rumble in the jungle, and so does that mean mm-hmm. that this places Knight Rider in the real world?
Well, there's the real Don King there.
Right.
Talking about real fights and talking about how this upcoming fight's going to make all the other stuff seem crappy.
Yeah. So,
which is a stretch.
So, I mean,
but
there, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's fun, and as soon as I saw him there, I was like, "Oh my god, it's friggin' Don King!"
It was great,
and how perfect to have Don King in this show about corrupt boxing promoters.
I mean, honestly, you can't imagine that they weren't writing this episode thinking, "Who could we get in the boxing world?" That like, I mean, there's just no way that they weren't thinking Don King wasn't going to be part of this episode. You know,
I know, but it also kind of gives a little glimpse into that the show might not have been doing too well if they start throwing in celebrity appearances.
Well,
and that's who they got.
And you're absolutely right though, because at one point they did say this is why they were like guest stars, like not well known, but this is why they started like amping up the number of cameos and guest stars in season 4. You know, last week they had that real magician Lance Burton. Earlier in the season they had that a cappella group outside the theater. So they were actually really trying to do that to drum up more interest in the show to increase viewership, and obviously it failed because the show got canceled in about, you know, after about 6 more episodes. But so I love this next scene though, because Michael calls out Davis in the middle of this press conference and basically starts calling him out for putting Keeler back in the boxing ring because he's being overfought, he's being overused, and then they bring the physician out who starts being like, "No, he's got a clean bill of health, he's perfect. He's got the heart of a 9-year-old or whatever he says. I don't remember.
Yeah, no, he's got the lungs like of an 18-year-old or something like that.
What did I
he's
just say?
He's got the heart of a 9-year-old? What? What? Oh, he's got the heart of a 9-year-old. He's got the feet of an infant. He's super fast.
He's got little baby feet.
Yeah, he's got tiny little baby feet.
I'm sorry.
He's got the knees of a racing dog.
You're right. The lungs of an 18-year-old. I'm sorry.
No, literally, he had a lung transplant.
Oh God. So Michael thinks at this point, he's like, you know what? He's like, I'm pretty sure that Keeler took a dive, because the whole beginning of the episode revolves around Leland watching footage from the 15th round where the whole match ended. And so Michael is convinced now that Keeler somehow, in some way, took a dive in the 15th round, and he's got to figure out why.
Yeah, 15 rounds heavyweight boxing.
Oh,
God.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Fucking brutal.
It's blood and spit everywhere.
Oh,
Jesus.
Oh, God. So Keeler's wife, at this point, after Michael has left the press match, Keeler's wife is, like, hiding behind a tree, and she confronts Michael, and we think she's going to, like, kind of shit on him for coming down on her husband, but she's like, no, I want you to go find my husband and talk to him personally because he can give
but
you answers.
Okay, so clearly Michaels made some waves, and then he walks. Okay, first off, let's talk about the bad guys, what their hideout is, where this thing. So this boxing camp is like in the middle of the forest, in a field or a park. I don't know. But the bad guys are hanging out in like this Winnebago.
Yes.
Just hanging out there like bad news, and they're just like looking around. And Michael walks by them, and they clearly see him. The assassin dude that blew up what's-his-face in the beginning is there.
Right.
And the camera's panning along, passes this tree, and there's the wife standing behind this tree, like within view of the Winnebago. And they can clearly see her talking to him. Like, it's the... I don't know. But this is the weird thing. This threw me off. She's like, you got to talk to my husband. Follow me because he's working. He's doing some road work.
Right, okay.
Those are the words she said.
She said
he's on the side. He's down the street doing some road work.
Doing road work at the viaduct. That's what she said.
Right. I'm like, okay, so he's a retired boxer and he's working for a construction company.
Right.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
okay.
That is exactly where my mind was when she said that. Yes.
Yeah. So those of you in the boxing world, maybe road work actually means like training, like physically running or, you know,
right,
doing something in motion.
Right.
But I definitely thought that he'd be like wearing like a construction hat, a hard hat.
That's what I
thought. He's wearing construction hat and red pants and boots, and he's got the hammer pounder.
So she says this, that he's doing road work at the viaduct. Now, we talked about this just before we recorded. I don't believe that is correct, because when they show up at the next location, it's not a viaduct, it's an aqueduct, correct?
I got a mouthful of granola bar.
I can see you eating it. I know. I was hoping.
Yeah, it's a wording thing. It is in fact an aqueduct.
Right.
And so it looked very much like the aqueduct from Terminator 2,
yep,
where that whole chase took place. It very well could have been the same one,
because
I'm sure there are thousands of them in California,
yeah,
but I'm sure there are only a handful that they would allow filming in.
Right.
And now this is the other thing.
Go ahead.
I just want to talk about it. So those things can be tremendously dangerous because they're prone to flash flooding. That's why they're there.
Right.
So is it common practice to go working out in the aqueduct or the drainage thing? Is that a thing that people do? Because I thought the authorities out in those areas were very strict about people going into those places.
You see,
I did too,
because every time something bad happened, there was always a ladder somewhere very close for them to get up and over. So I don't know if that's commonplace, because at one point later on in the episode, when Michael goes after who he thinks is Keeler, there's just a rope hanging over the side of the aqueduct. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't know, but
that was planned.
I said to myself when they pull into the aqueduct, you knew that this was going to come into play at some point later on in the episode, right? Like, you can't just have an aqueduct and then have one scene and not actually use it for some set piece.
It seemed like this whole thing, all the locations were just easy and cheap.
Yeah. Well, I think that speaks volumes to season 4. I think they were just looking for cheap ways to make these episodes a little more interesting.
Right.
So Michael asks, now at this point, he asks Keeler, I think it's Keeler, I got confused at this point, because there's another gentleman in this scene named Spider-Man, and then there's Keeler. Now, Spider-Man, I believe, is the trainer. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And we find out that Spider-Man is the one who's actually working for Davis, correct?
Yes. Okay. Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right.
It was confusing at first. Very kind of murky, but then you're like, okay, I see how this is all connected.
Right.
Yeah, Spider-Man, we learn, is working for Davis.
Right, because Keeler won't really talk to Michael about why he's getting back into the ring, but you can tell that he's a little anxious and he's a little nervous to be talking to Michael. And when Keeler gets ready to leave, Michael says something about Samuels, and Keeler turns around and says, I have no idea what you're talking about, and he goes away. But then we cut to the next scene where I thought it was Keeler at first, but it was Spider-Man who's going to Davis and says, listen, I want out of this entire thing. And Davis is like, fine, mm-hmm, you can get out of this whole thing, but you got to make a move for me to be able to do this. Put a little money in your pocket, and then you can get out of it, no questions mm-hmm asked. And then he agrees, and we kind of move on.
I agree. Yeah, yeah. Before we go too far, I just want to talk about the scene where Michael's talking to Keeler and Spider-Man. So he drives down into the viaduct,
yep.
And they're jogging, like they're both there, and Michael's with Kit, and Keeler's wife, and they jog up to the car, and Keeler sees his wife in there, and he's like, and kind of keeps jogging, but Michael gets out of Kit and starts jogging along with them. And the entire conversation takes place while they're jogging,
yes.
Which I thought was great. I thought it was also kind of a nice touch that Michael would jog along and be like, "Hey, I'm keeping up with you. I'm trying to be with you guys now." Yeah, Dave's showing me a photo of the exact scene, and I think it's fantastic. So it was cool.
It's a great scene. Absolutely. So the next scene, Kit taps into the security cameras at the training ground. The Keeler training ground. And they keep watching whole mm-hmm. sparring match going on. And they keep watching that Keeler keeps backing off. And for some reason, the sparring partner is avoiding Keeler's head. And they're just not quite sure why that is. But Michael thinks there's something to that.
But Devin's also like, come on, Michael. It's a different tactic. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Your ideas are stupid. There's something definitely weird going on here. There's something weird.
Well, Devin, we assume at this point, was probably a boxer, which is why he's giving Michael grief, right?
Not necessarily because he trained to, but when he was in the POW camp, he became a bare-knuckle boxer and had to fight for his dinner and would beat the shit out of people. Absolutely destroy them with his fists. Bare fists on bone. On faces.
Mm.
Yeah, so Devin's pretty hardcore. He saw this fighting. He's like, oh, they're wearing gloves. Psh, whatever.
I know. Okay, correct me if I'm wrong. So who calls Michael at this point? Is it Keeler or Spider-Man to ask Michael to meet him at the aqueduct at 8 o'clock the next morning?
It's Spider-Man.
It is Spider-Man. Okay.
It's Spider-Man because it's his... He has to call Michael to get out of the whole thing.
Right.
So Davis doesn't really give a shit too much about... the fight or something. I don't know. He just needs to get out. He needs to have it so that Keeler doesn't win.
Yes.
Or something. I don't know. He just needs his money.
It got murky. So he sends Spider-Man out to meet Michael at the aqueduct the next morning. And we see he gets up and almost immediately upon getting up, when they meet each other at the top of the aqueduct, Spider-Man just gets shot by two of Davis's men who are hiding up at the top of the aqueduct. Kit then has to create a smoke screen.
But I gotta talk about this.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's like, so they're driving up, and it's like a big dam. It's basically, it's the same location from one of the episodes earlier in the seasons, or season two, I think. But Kit's like, Michael, the dam is too big. My sensors can't detect over it, like over and around it. So again, it's another perfect example of his equipment just conveniently not being able to do anything. So they couldn't find Spider-Man at first. So Michael had to run up the thing. And the assassins, the two guys that blew up the dude in the beginning, it's broad daylight. And they're probably several hundred feet away, maybe 100 yards away. And they're going to shoot them with machine guns in broad daylight in the middle of this Aquafina.
I mean, it's very covert. I mean, they really know how to do things right under the cover of night. It was perfect.
Well, that the assassin's basically like, I'm a professional. You don't have to worry about me. I'm like, I think you came out of a Cracker Jack box.
Just a little bit. But so Spider-Man gets shot by the guys. Kit creates a smoke screen to hide. Michael and Spider-Man slide down the aqueduct, get into Kit, and then, of course, in classic 80s trope, Spider-Man gets like one thing out about how Keeler didn't snuff Samuels, and then he dies.
He dies in the passenger seat of Kit.
Yeah.
I think that's the first person that's actually died inside of Kit.
I think you're right. Absolutely.
So now Bonnie has to take the passenger seat out and get all the blood out of the seat.
Well, you can imagine how much blood do you think there was on Kit's passenger seat?
Well, Spider-Man's a pretty big dude. What is it? Most people have, what, 8 pints?
Yeah, just about.
He's probably got at least 11. He's 11, and he's in good shape, so he was running, and so just like sprayed everywhere. But I think it would have been funny if when they slid down the aqueduct to Kit, they actually, because of the smoke screen, couldn't see and slid into the back of Kit. Bam! And got stuck. I just think that would have been funny. but they didn't do that.
Really
my ideas don't make it sometimes.
It's great. No, it's great. So so they decide that they're going to watch the original fight the way that they're like, we got to figure out what's going on here. So Michael is the one who comes up with the idea, hey, let's watch the way that Leland watched it without sound. So they rewatch it and they start
Oh, wow. Groundbreaking.
I'm like, oh, great. Okay. So they start reading the lips, and apparently the Foundation has a device that can transcribe lip movements when the sound is muted, because it just prints out exactly what Keeler was saying in the moment we saw at the beginning of the episode.
I think it would be great if it was printed like in a dot matrix, and like it's just like and they have to wait there, and they're just like twiddling their thumbs, and it's just making this racket.
Greg, do you?
I love dot matrix printers.
I do too. I do too. Do you remember what it said?
I can't lift my arms. My something heavy. Blah blah blah. I'll try. Something like that.
Pretty much. He says, I can't focus. My arms are numb. I don't know if I can lift them. I'll try. And so they assume that the physician forged all the reports about Keeler's well-being, because clearly he's going something terrible is happening to his body.
Yes. Yeah. That's why, but probably explains why during his sparring match he wasn't getting hit in the head.
That's right. Okay, so I have a question. What the hell is Davis spraying on his teeth?
So he explains later, well, once he gets once Michael slide tackles him, which we should talk about that for sure. But the entire time, he's getting nervous, he's spraying something on his teeth and rubbing it into his teeth, and I'm thinking, oh, he's a drug addict or something like that. He's got some like methamphetamine or something, but it turns out he has a bad heart. So I think it's some sort of nitroglycerin spray or something like that.
It was just a very weird moments that he just rubbing it anyway. I just found it to be very strange.
I don't know why. I don't know what just happened to me, but all of a sudden it just came into my head that he's actually spraying liquid ass on his teeth. I don't know why I thought of that.
Oh my god. Liquid ass.
A little bottle of liquid ass. He likes the taste. Maybe it tastes great.
It could.
It tastes like bubblegum.
I've never had liquid ass.
Oh boy. Okay.
So Keeler's wife, when Michael goes to talk to him, Keeler's wife tells Michael, well, he might be back at the viaduct. Why don't you go see if he's there? So when Michael pulls back into the viaduct, it immediately begins flooding. And they see that there is one person who's running who's wearing Keeler's hoodie, but it's not actually Keeler.
So these guys somehow know people that they could get them to turn the dam, open the dam, release the floodgates. I don't know. So the whole thing starts flooding, which is why they're dangerous, because you can't get out. And Kit didn't notice it. Great. So it's this wall of water starts coming down behind it. And I think this was some of the best David Hasselhoff acting while not moving bits ever. So, like, Kit's floating, and you see Hasselhoff, he's just like, kind of like shaking and bouncing to make it look like he's doing something, but he's not really doing anything. I loved it. Loved it.
It was great. It was great. Well, okay, so where the hell did he turbo boost out of? So when he goes down one of the tunnels off the main aqueduct, and they kind of get stuck there, and he just like turbo boosts through the concrete. What does he do?
Sure, he pulled a graboid like in the Tremors. He tremored out.
Do you think the Foundation's going to have to pay for the fucking hole in the concrete on the aqueduct?
No, it never happened. Michael just left. Now there's just a big hole.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
The hole was always there.
So Michael heads back to Keeler's house because he knows that Keeler's wife is not going to be the type of person to set him up. So when he gets back to the house, one of Davis's men is there. Michael or Kit auto harmonizes the doorbell. And so when the door opens, there's no one there. And Michael just like somehow got into the house behind one of Davis's men and knocks him out pretty handily.
Yeah, immediately. Like, this guy, it's the assassin dude. He's kind of creepy. He had a really weird way of standing, kind of hunched over and like,
I'm a professional. I'm playing with guns. I like stuff. Leather jackets. And I slick my hair back. And I don't know. Like, he was just standing there. He practically emptied his entire clip into the door, and Michael just kind of thwacked him with something.
No,
I don't know.
Just
beat him up. Smashed him in the face.
Knocked him
unconscious.
And Keeler's wife says to Michael, well, I know where he probably is. This is where he goes to kind of clear his thoughts. So they find him at the boxing ring.
Oh, what did he say? He says he's at his church where he goes to clear his thoughts.
That's what
everything she says is like in riddles.
Yeah. It's like,
oh, he's in the aqueduct.
Yeah.
Oh, he's at his church.
Yeah. He's at his church where he goes to do most of his thinking. And of course, you know, you see him alone in the stadium, in the only one in there in the boxing ring. So he and Michael finally have this conversation, and Keeler basically tells Michael, I did kill this man. I killed Samuels after a bar fight. And Michael's like, no, you didn't. Like, Davis used you for that and basically framed you for it. And this is where it gets murky. So what the I still don't understand what Davis's whole plan was.
He just wants to make money. That is basically what he said. He has a big house. He's got all kinds of stuff. He's using him to win the match to make money. That's the point. That's it. There's nothing else. There's no like big conspiracy. He's just trying to throw the match, which is just shitty, but that's all he's doing. He's ruining people's lives for his own gain.
Okay, good. So, and then we start seeing like all of Davis's men start like coming out of every entrance into the stadium and just converging on the boxing ring.
Well, this is it. Before that happens, like, so Keeler and Michael are talking and they're chit-chatting, and then Kit calls in on the voice box on the stopwatch on the thing and the wrist thing. Jesus. He just talks to Michael. He's like, "Michael, I'm detecting that there's someone's recording audio up in the production booth or whatever." So like Kit can detect that audio is being recorded right now. So this is the thing that burns me up. So Kit couldn't look over the side of this dam, but he can tell that someone's recording this conversation inside the stadium while he's in the parking lot outside somewhere?
Yep.
Perfect. Great. And sure enough, Davis is up there and he's like, yeah, I'm up here. I'm recording everything. I don't know why he's recording. It doesn't make sense why he would be doing anything up there.
Absolutely made no sense.
And also the fact all of his henchmen start coming down the bleachers like they're going to fight, and nobody's there. All the lights are on, like maintenance isn't there, like concessions isn't like getting the nacho cheese warmed up or something like that. Like, this entire stadium is empty.
Yeah. So they start descending on Michael and Keeler, and I got to tell you, this whole sequence from now to the end of the episode was great, because like Michael and Keeler are really holding their own in the boxing ring before they realize that, you know, one of them has to go after Davis because he's the one they really want to bring down. And somehow Kit ends up in the stadium down by the boxing ring.
Yeah, driving around in circles, hitting these guys. Bam! Running them over, like doing burnouts on their faces. Really brutal stuff.
They really pushed the limits of what they could do with Kit. Was they try to make him more of a human character by engaging in these physical fights with Michael. Like, they really tried really hard this season to do that.
Yeah, they tried to have him more involved. I wish that it was more obscure, like every time Kit bumped somebody, just electrocuted them. Or like he had like nets or something like that. He could fire nets at people.
Yeah.
Or harpoons. I don't know. Anything just weird. Beach balls or pellets. I don't know. Whatever.
Okay, Greg. Here comes the best moment of the episode. So when Michael goes after Davis, because Davis runs and Michael chases him down, Davis starts running down the escalator and Michael slides down the escalator rail, tackling Davis to the ground with such force, just obliterated him down to the ground. It was great.
He tackled Davis so hard that he just came apart. Pieces everywhere. Hands here, fingers separated from their bones, toes all over the place, head rolling around on the floor. Michael obliterated
liquid
him.
Ass all over the concrete.
Smeared him up. No, but this is where basically Davis says, seriously, don't punch me. I have a bad heart. Okay.
Right.
That's it. He just gives up. Done.
And that's it. Now, this. Remember, I told you earlier I had a bit of trivia about that moment of Michael sliding down the escalator.
Yeah.
Apparently, during this scene, David Hasselhoff was injured while filming the close-up of Michael's slide down the escalator and required emergency surgery on his ass.
Seriously? I was just about to say, was it on his ass?
Yes. He required...
You know what? I'm going to guess. I think I know what it was. He was sliding down the rubber banister on the escalator, and I think he split himself. He split himself. David.
I think it was so funny that that's the moment right there. I could watch it again and probably pinpoint the moment when he busted his ass on the escalator.
That he was bifurcated.
Oh, poor Michael. I wonder if he had to have a donut for the rest of the shoot, or maybe this was the last thing that was shot. I don't know. Just feel bad for him.
A special donut in kit. Oh, I know, totally. It was epic. I think that was the best slide tackle I've ever seen.
Oh, it was great. And so, really, the episode kind of concludes right after that moment with, Keeler basically makes the decision to retire from boxing, and he's happily back with his wife. He gives her a bouquet of flowers, and Michael's getting ready to go on another date when Devin calls because they have another case.
Yeah, and it's awful. Michael's like, he gets upset because he's already got the limo. He's got the restaurant reservations. So Keeler gave his wife this giant bouquet of flowers, but Michael's just like, oh, he goes over to Kit and pulls out another bouquet of flowers. He's like, you know what? I had a knockout. Basically says, here, I'm going to give you these flowers because my date fell through. Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor Michael.
I know. You feel bad for him, but you know what though? I did like this episode. I'm going to give the edge to the Magicians for last week. I think I liked that one more, but I did find a lot to enjoy about this episode. It really was fun.
I don't remember what I gave last week. I probably gave it a 4, but I actually felt this one was better. So I don't know. My scale is all over the place, but I enjoed it. I'd say 4, 4.5, 4.
Right.
It was solid. It was stupid.
Of course,
but
it was
fun.
It was the dumbest. It was the dumbest because they have no more ideas for this show. Did you have a Schmankman this week, Greg?
Oh, man. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. No. I don't have a Schmankman.
I'm giving my...
Are you okay? Your eyes are blinking.
I'm giving mine to Don King.
Okay. Yeah. Let's double Don.
All right.
Let's
double
do a little
down
double
on,
Don.
Double down on Don. All right. Good. I like it. Gregory, do you want to hear what's coming up next week?
I would love it if you would enlighten me, sir.
All right. So next week, after this week, Greg, we have 6 episodes left of the show, and then we're done. We're wrapped.
That's crazy. What happened?
I know. I know. All right. Next week's episode is...
Be a nice New Year's present to ourselves.
I know. It's going to... God, we've been waiting for this for a while. All right. Next week's episode is Season 4, Episode 16, Night of 1,000 Devils.
I don't have anything to say.
I don't either.
To that.
Here we go. Michael pursues the criminal responsible for killing a friend and fellow agent, and his investigation takes him to a secret 1,500-mile race across the U.S.-Mexico border.
That's amazing. I'm really looking forward to that. And again, it's another Foundation-related problem.
Of course it is. Of course it is. Fuck.
And it's like, wait, the Foundation has other agents? Who are they?
Of course, yeah. I don't know. I have no idea, Greg. I'm so sad that this show is coming to a close, but it's this is the end of an era for us, I gotta tell you.
This was we're not even there yet. Still got 6 weeks to go, but hell, holy shit.
We do. All right, guys, listen, if you want to get in touch with us, there are many ways you can do that. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ChampaKlein, Instagram at Knight Rider Years, Twitter at Knight Rider Pod. You can find us on our website, ChampaKlein.com, to find every episode of the Knight Rider Years. You can also call our hotline at 207-835-1954 and leave us a message about anything. You can leave us a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. It is the best way for us to be seen and heard by other listeners. And that was for everybody who listens to the show. Greg, do you have any closing thoughts before we say goodnight?
No, David, I'm fine.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, for the Knight Rider Years, I am Spider-Man's Aqueduct Bullet Holes.
And I am Kit's brand new donut car seat adapter for Michael's bum-bum.
Oh, poor Michael. Michael's posterior is just, it hurts so much, and I'm so sad.
Help me.
All right, guys, have a fantastic week.
Hang on to your fenders, pal. thinking, kid. I'm not upset.
Your pulse rate is up, your blood pressure is high, and you're gripping the steering wheel with alarming pressure.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Podfix Network. Discover more audible gems like this at podfixnetwork.com. Make sure to catch up-to-the-minute network shenanigans by following @Podfix on Twitter, official_Podfix on Instagram, @Podfix Network on Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to Podfix Presents wherever you choose to find podcasts. The Podfix Network, artist owned and loved.